many times have you heard a movie is all right? It's average. It's just okay. If you ask your friends if you should see it and they say, meh, I'm Davey Barrett and he's Darren Cross. And on this show, we'll break down and review these movies and decide once and for all if these meh movies are good or bad and whether or not you should watch them. Because on this show, there are no meh movies. Now, for a movie to be meh, it must be between 40 and 60 on the tomato meter or 4 and 6 on IMDb. And this week, we have another perfect meh movie. Another 50% movie on Rotten Tomatoes. Coming out, I don't know if it's coming out in theaters. I have no clue where it's coming out. But Tom Holland, that's right, Spider-Man himself, has a new movie coming out called Cherry. It looks like this kind of epic, throughout his history, like going to war, bank robbing, like the whole history of this character kind of in this movie. Looks pretty crazy. Looks pretty insane. But Tom Holland, we decided we'd go back and check out an earlier Tom Holland movie. This is the movie he did that came out in theaters right before he got Spider-Man. In fact, the director even said that he was talking about, he was on set, he was talking about how he was going to be Spider-Man. He was confident he was going to get the part. And obviously he did and went on to make some fun Spider-Man films. But this is the movie he did right before, Edge of Winter, which, like I said, is a 50% on Rotten Tomatoes and a 5.4 on IMDb. Of course, spoiler warning for Edge of Winter. We're going to be talking the whole movie. Darren, in case it's been a while since they've seen it or they've never seen it before, what is Edge of Winter all about?
Edge of Winter is about the Baker family. So we have Elliot Baker, Bradley Baker, and Caleb Baker. Bradley and Caleb are the sons of Elliot, and they go to stay with him, and their parents are divorced. And Elliot's kind of like a rough and tumble kind of guy, like an outdoorsman, I guess you would say.
I think he's a logger. I think he works logging. Yeah.
Yeah. Very blue collar, like hunts, things like that. Owns rifles, you know, et cetera. And on a whim, they decide to go out to the logging location where he, works or did work until he was injured and shoot some stuff. And then on the way back, they get into a car accident because he lets his son drive and they essentially become stranded and they're trying to figure out a way to stay warm while also trying to figure out a way to get rescued. But we slowly start to learn that Elliot is kind of having a nervous breakdown or losing his mind of some capacity. And not so hilarious consequences ensue.
Yes, there are not many shenanigans in this movie.
Not a lot of shenanigans, no.
All right, Darren, thank you for that synopsis. It was the long road to say a dad and his two sons get stranded in the wilderness.
Yeah.
Darren, the first question we ask of all our meh movies is, did the movie do what it was supposed to do? So what do you say for Edge of Winter, a psychological thriller drama, did it do what it was supposed to do?
For this movie, I said mostly it did what it was supposed to do. I didn't say a full yes because I thought it being sold as a psychological thriller, I thought there would be like some more like twists and turns or kind of more things that would happen that were more unexpected or like kind of I don't want to say out of left field, but maybe a little bit out of left field. But overall, as far as I think it checks most of the boxes to call it that kind of movie. So I think I would say overall it did do what it was supposed to do.
Yeah, I'm going to say the movie did do what it was supposed to do for me because it's listed as a psychological thriller. If it was listed as a slasher film or if it were listed as a horror, something like that, then maybe I would say no. But the psychological part of it, there's definitely a lot of things going on with Elliot's character, the dad, and I think it does hit that psychological thriller category for me. So I am going to give it did what it was supposed to do. And we'll get into the psychological things, what happens to Elliot. So like we said, spoiler warning, we are going to talk about everything that Elliot goes through, and we're going to get into these details. But speaking of Elliot, let's talk about this cast. Let's talk about, it's a small cast. It's very, very quick to go over this week. Not like Valentine's Day. So I believe there were only 8 actors in the entire movie. We've got Joel Kinnaman, who plays the dad, Elliot Baker. We've got Tom Holland, who plays the oldest son, Bradley. Percy Hines-White, who plays the younger son, Caleb. Rosif Sutherland, who plays Luke. And Shiloh Fernandez, who plays Richard. Two men who stumble upon them in the wilderness. We've got Rachel Lefevre, who plays Karen, the mom. We've got Sean Benson, who plays Ted, the stepdad. And we've got Patrick Garrow in a great performance, a career-defining performance as the gas station clerk.
Does he even say anything? I think he might say one thing.
I have no clue. I hope that's the actual gas station clerk from that gas station. They're like, hey, man, want to be in a movie?
Yeah.
And now he's got like an IMDb credit. So, Darren, small but mighty cast this week. Who do you have as your top performer? Who brought it?
Maybe not completely surprisingly, I had to go with our lead, Joel Kinnaman. He did a really great job. Like I said, like he's supposed to be sort of sold as this kind of like blue collar, like rough, kind of hard individual, if you will. Which is a very big contrast to his kids, and especially to Bradley, who are like seem to now with their mom and her mom, their mom's fiance or new husband, seem to live a much different life than that, a much more like white collar, middle upper class sort of life. And so, yeah, I really bought that. And then when he started to sort of like lose himself, I thought it was pretty good. They were very specific moments of like extreme intense emotions. And I thought assuming they were kind of going for like maybe someone who's like severely bipolar or has like manic depressive disease or whatever, they never say, you know, like what he suffers from or anything. But I thought that his performance kind of like just kind of out of nowhere, he would just have like a meltdown over some sort of news or some news he already knew and just kind of remembered. And it was pretty jarring. Like got pretty intense pretty quickly. And I thought he did a really good job with it. I gave it to Joel.
I also gave my top performer to Joel Kinnaman. And you will recognize him from Suicide Squad. Probably he plays Rick Flagg. You may also recognize him. He's had a really strong TV run. He was on the TV series Hannah. He was on the show Altered Carbon, House of Cards. He had a really strong run in the TV series The Killing on AMC, which was like a murder, cop, crime, thriller kind of show. I don't think he's really popped as much in movies. Obviously, like I said, Suicide Squad is his big credit. He was in the remake of RoboCop. He played RoboCop in the 2014 remake, which, come on, what do you need to remake RoboCop for? That's a perfect movie. So he's definitely someone who is doing big things and getting some big roles and just happens to have really hit on TV, it seems like, more than he's hit in movies throughout his career. But like you said, it was a really, really strong performance. And I'm going to get into a little bit more in successes and fails. I had it pegged because I was researching about bipolar, and I don't think the anger is really as known with bipolar disease. This is a totally amateur diagnosis here. From the clevelandclinic.org, though, our hometown hospital, I was reading about intermittent explosive disorder. And it sounded to fit kind of how they created this character, someone who just this explosion of anger, and then it, you know, it lasts very short amount of time. But yeah, it was powerful. Those scenes were quite powerful. We should probably talk a little bit about Tom Holland. he wasn't my top performer, but just because Joel Kinnaman did so much and was so good, yeah. I thought Tom Holland was good. All right. I think he's gotten stronger. He didn't really get that, like, standing up to your dad kind of thing. He didn't seem as scared as he should have been for the situation. He was all right. There was nothing wrong inherently with his performance, but there was nothing that really made it great.
Yeah, I liked him actually earlier on in the movie more than I liked him later on in the movie. I thought he really sold the concept of, like, he's kind of just like a shitty little teenager.
We say now in our 30s.
Right. Where he just, like, you know, his early on in the movie, Elliot is the dad, is just, he's trying to, like, connect with his sons, right? He clearly doesn't see them a lot. And it's awkward to some degree still. And so he's just trying to, like, be a good dad or, like, a cool dad and connect with them. And, like, Brad, who's played by Tom Holland, is just having none of it and just being, like, a total jerk. And so I thought, I was really, like, if I was supposed to hate Brad in the first 10 minutes of the movie, I hated Brad in the first 10 minutes of the movie. I was like, this kid is the worst.
Nice. Yeah, I think Tom Holland...
His poor dad is just trying to connect with him.
Yeah, I think Tom Holland has gone on to do some better stuff. And I think there's huge things. I mean, he already has huge things. He's Spider-Man, for crying out loud. He's playing Nathan Drake in that movie. He's going to continue to get huge, huge roles. So, yeah, an interesting look back at him in a younger performance.
Yeah.
All right, Darren. That takes us into successes and failures. And the first thing we like to do here is talk about themes. And I think for me, the theme of this movie kind of just smacks you right in the face. I mean, it's pretty obvious. What did you have for the big theme of the movie, and was it a success or a fail for you?
For me, the big theme was, it was a combination of two things. It was related to how, like, divorce and things affect a family, but then also how they can mentally affect a family. And so I know that's like a long theme, and maybe you can say it in better words, but yeah, like mental health issues, and then specifically how they relate to family dynamics. Because when, you know, it's easy to sort of shrug off a stranger who might have mental health issues, but like when it's somebody that you have an otherwise semi-normal relationship with, and especially like a parent figure who is, you know, there to provide for you and protect you and all the things that parents do when for kids, I think it gets quite complicated on how you handle that, especially from the case of a dependent, like a child.
I think the psychological part would have become more of a theme if maybe the mom was still involved more in the movie. And, you know, if someone gave him a lecture like, hey, man, you got to get your anger under control if you want to keep hanging out with your kids. Like, if that threat was there, if his psychological problems were the threat, the thing that was pulling him away from his kids, then I could have seen that. But they didn't really lean into that. They just kind of used it as a device to create the villain in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I was picking up, you know, I just kind of said it was an extreme example of the trauma from divorce or the trauma from a broken family. And it was basically like magnifying it. Okay, let's take that trauma, put it in a really extreme situation, and highlight it that way. And yeah, this was a success for me. They established that the reason kind of he goes down this hole, this psychological fall, is the fear that his kids are going to get taken away from him. He gets blindsided by the news that their stepdad or stepboyfriend has gotten a job in London, and the whole family's moving to London. And it was interesting because they did a really good job with the kids of being like, like, Ted is going to pay, he'll buy you a plane ticket. Like, you can still come visit us. And he was like, no, they can't take you away from me. No, they can't do that. You're my kids. Like, so no matter how much the kids reassured him, like, we're not leaving you, Dad. Like, we'll still FaceTime with you or whatever. Like,
yeah,
he was so far gone down into that psychological hole that he couldn't be reasoned with anymore. So, yeah, so I thought it was an interesting way of highlighting that trauma and showing that trauma that can happen.
Yeah. And then the other, no, I agree. I think that's, that was a success. And the only other thing I said about theme related thing was, I think it shows when dealing with Richard and Luke, I think it was they did a good job of sort of showing, when there's a crisis, like, where do you draw the line between like family and morality, or what's right or just, right? Because you could see that. So in the movie, essentially, Elliot, by the end of the movie, has killed both Richard and Luke.
Yes.
So, and these are two gentlemen that happened upon or possibly already staying at the hunting cabin that Elliot and the boys find as a shelter. And so things are very awkward from the beginning because Elliot doesn't trust them at all. But you could tell from in the eyes of the sons, like, they clearly care and want to protect their father, but they also realize, like, yeah, these two people are complete strangers to me, but what our dad's doing is not okay. And there's like, and I think that's a real struggle in them to like, whose side should I be on here? Like, what's like, where am I here? So, yeah.
Yeah, that would be really hard. What age do you peg them at? Like 15 and like 10, 15
yeah.
and 12?
Yeah. Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
To see your dad as the villain of the story, that'd be difficult.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Darren, what else? I guess it's my turn to go next. Another success I have, I'm going to keep piling on the dad here. The cliche of the divorced dad acts more like a big kid. it is a little cliche, right? But I think it worked really well in this movie. I think they did a good job of kind of nailing it with Joel Kinnaman's performance. Like the first, what did you say, third of the movie? He yeah. acts more like their big brother. Like he right. teases them. He gives them their first sip of beer. Lets him shoot a gun. But there's like the hitting him with snowballs and he whitewashes Tom Holland, you know? If you don't, by the way, if you don't know what whitewashing is, if you live like somewhere in a warm climate, it's basically where you just take a handful of snow and just bury it in someone's face, which he does to his oldest son. You could also knock someone down and shove their head in the face. It's a favorite of bullies everywhere.
Also sounds like some kind of terrible racially motivated thing.
Yes, this has nothing to do with race. This is all about snow. So this whole thing of him acting like a big kid and, you know, not being mature. And he says they were like teenagers when he had the eldest son, right?
Yeah,
so yeah. I mean, he's probably only like 30 to 35 years old himself.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I that was a success for me, that relationship there in the first third of the movie.
Nice. I'm going to switch to a failure, and it's kind of like, I guess, my main failure. And you kind of already brought it up, actually, when we were talking about theme stuff, was they didn't give us enough background about the family and specifically Elliot to set up his like terrible mental situation. So I really think that they missed an opportunity there, and it wouldn't have had to have been that long, you know, I don't know, like maybe 10 minutes or 15 minutes, I don't know, however long it needed, and not too long, to sort of maybe give us some like flashbacks or give us some more content about like why they split up in the first place. He sort of talks about it, but he basically just writes it off as like, oh, I was really young and I didn't even know if I wanted to have kids and that sort of thing. But yeah, so if they could explain it more, and then like you were saying, maybe do like allude more to him having violent episodes, and that having also something to do with why they got divorced, because I'm sure it was something that had to do with it. I think that would have gone a long way to not only making us understand Elliot going down this road again, but also supporting the awkward relationship with the sons that from the beginning. I mean, the younger son is a little less awkward. Like, he's kind of just more like in for anything because he's still like young enough where he just a little naive.
Yeah. They did that part well, you know, the older son being more wise to what kind of guy their dad really is.
Right. So yeah, if we just had more of that background, I think it would have gone a long way to assist with supporting the stuff we saw later on in the movie.
All right. Right on. All right. My turn to hit you with a fail. My fail last week for Dragonheart, I hated the first two thirds of the movie, like the last third of the movie. It's the opposite this week. The third act of this movie is a fail for me. Really the climax of the movie. So you could feel the movie winding down. You could feel we were building to something. And some of the decisions the characters make in that final climactic scene. Why does Tom Holland burn the cabin down? What is that supposed to distract his dad? Is that supposed to be like help their getaway?
Yeah, my initial thought was, is he going to try to send it as like a signal to like, if somebody sees this burning cabin, they'll come, sort of thing.
I don't know. And then this was a terrible plan by the, I don't know which guy it was, Luke or Richard. Whichever guy was left.
Luke.
It was Luke. Yeah. He has the youngest son, Caleb, and he has Caleb run out there as a distraction. Then he runs in, shoulder blocks Elliot, and then goes, come on, kids, run away. Like, that was the plan. And Elliot ends up catching him from behind, taking him down, and pummeling his face to death. Like, what? It was a terrible plan, an absolute terrible plan. You knock the dad out. If you're going to hit him like in the back of the head with a log or something like that and knock him out, fine.
Yeah.
And then.
Wait, before you go on, that leads into I'll hint at one of my quick picks, that it was the classic, you hit the bad guy and he's dazed, but then you run away. So he recovers and catches you.
Yes. Like,
when the bad guy is down, just kill him or whatever you need to do.
And then the kids run into that truck. The truck that three adult men haven't been able to get out of the snow. And the kids run to the truck, fire it up, and just drive away. And I'm like, no. All right, and you know what? I'm just going to roll this in. I had them as separate fails, but I'm just going to roll it in because talking about the end of the movie, and I've seen this with independent movies before. If you watch a lot of indie comedies, indie horror movies, they just end. It's like they don't have enough money for like an epilogue or something like that, or like a final scene. They just end. And I could feel it coming with this movie. As soon as the boys got in the car and they started driving, I was like, this thing is ending. Here come the credits. And sure enough, and there's so many questions left. So many questions. How did the kids know where they were going? Were they driving north or south? I don't know. Did they find help or did they drive all the way home? What did the dad do? Did the dad freeze to death like Jack Nicholson in The Shining?
Yeah.
Or did he just stay out there? Did he just live on the land and stay out there like he wanted to? The other guys, were they good guys or bad guys? Are people looking for them now? What did they tell their mom when they got back to their mom? And will she ever let them see their dad again? Like, is he going to be in their life ever? Or are they like sending out the police, the Mounties, to go find him? So many questions the way this movie ends.
Do note that he said Mounties because this takes place in Canada.
Yes, it does.
So we're not going to call the police. We're calling the Mountie.
Yes. Actually, it takes place in Sudbury.
Sudbury,
Ontario. Which, maybe, if you look on the map, looks like a pretty cold place. It's just north of the Georgian Bay.
Oh, George and Bay. Davey, I think those questions you had is an excellent segue into our sequel.
Okay. There you go. All your questions will be answered based on the sequels me and Darren pitched. They're going to become canon because I don't think they're going to make Edge of Winter 2.
Oh, you know what? Don't you do the...
We're not there yet.
Yeah,
we're not there yet. It's coming. It's coming. It's a cliffhanger. It's a tease for later in the podcast. All right. Did you have anything else in successes and failures?
No, we kind of hit on the other stuff I had as we were talking about earlier things, to be honest.
I will say, I guess I should give some credit here to the director who hasn't directed a lot of things. Rob Conley, I thought the movie looked...
Not to be confused with Robert Conley.
Yes, which threw Darren's research way off.
He's also directed films, so it could be confusing.
I think the movie looked really great. I think the stuff up there in Sudbury, Ontario looked great. I thought, from a production standpoint, I liked kind of the way it was edited together. I liked some of the editing and the pacing of the movie worked. There were some cool shots of Joel Kinnaman just kind of staring off into the wilderness and kind of breathing in that cold Ontario air. It was apparently minus 30 degrees Celsius while they were filming up there. So they went legit. They weren't faking snow like Home Alone did with potato shavings. So I'll give some credit there.
Yeah, it in a kind of, I'm sure this was on purpose, is that the whole film sort of had a, oh, back to your snow thing, sort of had like a whitewash to it, which I think that, I think was intentional to sort of kind of set the tone of this misty, what's the right word for it? Like a winter day that's kind of, there's a word for it.
Snowy, icy?
No, more of like gray. An emotional word.
Melancholy?
Yeah, no, that's not what I was thinking, but that'll work. Sure. Dreary. Dreary. That's what I was thinking.
Dreary
of.
Winter day.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I want you to know, listeners, that not only did I watch the movie and do my research on the movie, but I got in the mood for this movie. Because as soon as I finished watching it, I immediately took my dog for a walk, and it's freezing and snowy in Cleveland right now, and we walked in the woods. And then right before we recorded this podcast, I just got done taking the dog for another walk in those snowy woods. So I really, really got in the zone for this podcast.
Did you fall in any water?
No, I did not. Luckily, we did not fall through the ice.
That's good.
Yeah. All right, Darren, that is enough about what we think. Let's take a look at what the Rotten Tomatoes reviewer said. And surprisingly, there are more reviews for this movie than there were for Dragonheart last week. So, you feeling fresh or you feeling rotten?
Let's go fresh.
All right, this is perfect. From Glenn Lovell from Cinema Dope. Glenn says his fresh review... Kinnaman's weekend father is a return to form, a twitchy, deeply flawed character we can't help rooting for even as we fear the worst. He reminded me of Nicholson in The Shining. Yes, I was looking for this. All right, let's compare this to The Shining. Darren, go.
I mean, it's basically the same movie.
I said that I actually kind of enjoyed what Joel Kinnaman did different than Jack Nicholson, whereas Jack Nicholson is very much chewing up the scenery, as they say, in that hotel, in the great way, in the best kind of way, in an all-time classic kind of way. I thought Joel Kinnaman was doing a much more reserved, going into this psychological hole performance. It was more in his eyes and more in his breathing. And his body language than it was in just, running around the forest, ranting and raving and killing deer and things.
Yeah. I mean, we both gave him our top performance. So, I think that's an accurate review.
Were you rooting for him, though?
I was until he killed Richard. Even when he hurt Richard, I was still kind of rooting for him. But then when he like full on killed him, I was like, all right, all bets are off.
Yeah. As soon as he came out of the woods and saw Richard there at the truck, I was like, nope, he's the villain of the movie. Yeah. So, yeah. So Glenn Lovell, I'm a little bit worried that you were rooting for him throughout the movie. All right. Another fresh review. Norman Wilner from Now Toronto. This may sound like a rotten review, but it is a fresh review. He says there's a shift in perspective around the hour mark that doesn't work as elegantly as it should, but the cast carry it over the hump. So he liked the cast enough. His original score was a 3 out of 5, which makes it a fresh review on Rotten Tomatoes. Did you notice that shift in perspective, and did it work for you?
No, I did not notice. So where do you think we are at an hour in the movie?
I think after he kills Richard. I think that's the moment. So it's very much from Elliot's perspective. And then after he does that, after he commits that murder, it then sort of becomes Bradley's movie. It kind of is from his perspective from that point.
Yeah, going I could forward. See it. I could see that's fair.
Or the kids, Caleb too.
Yeah.
It didn't bother me. I didn't notice it watching the movie until I read his review, and I was like, oh, okay, yeah, there was a shift in perspective. It felt pretty natural for me in the movie.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, it is time for some rotten reviews, and I got to go with Rob Hunter here from Film School Rejects, because this is one of those just beautiful, beautiful Rotten Tomatoes reviews. His rotten review almost works better as a revenge tale between a tree and a logger than it does a suspenseful story of survival. It does not work well as either. What? A revenge tale between a tree and a logger? Were the trees getting revenge on him? Is that the takeaway that Rob Hunter took?
So it was like a deep environmentalist movie. That's what it was.
The trees caused him to go crazy? Is that what we're taking away from this?
Yeah, it's those damn north side branches that face away from the sun. They're in the darkness. Evil in the darkness.
Some of these just make no sense sometimes. I love it. All right, our last rotten review is a pretty simple one from Roger Moore from Movie Nation. I try to get some diversity into these Rotten Tomatoes reviews, but only men apparently have reviewed this movie on Rotten Tomatoes. Roger Moore from Movie Nation, he says, frosty, gritty, and utterly predictable. Was it predictable, Darren?
I don't know if it was fully predictable. I mean, if we're talking about was Elliot going to or not kill the kids, then I would say, sure, it's predictable. I mean, I did not think the movie was going to go that dark, and it didn't. But the rest of it, I mean, I don't know if it was predictable. I mean, you kind of had, I guess you suspected that he might kill Richard and Luke, the two guys. But it wasn't clear how the boys were going to escape or what that was going to look like. So for like the climax, I don't think the climax was necessarily predictable.
Yeah, I wouldn't call this predictable. I didn't see some of the things, what we said before with the intermittent explosive disorder. Some of those outbursts that he had, I didn't see that stuff coming really. And the reason why he kind of loses it and becomes unhinged, I didn't see that coming either. You know, the kids being pulled away from him is the reason that he kind of loses that. So that kept me engaged. That was interesting to me. So yeah. I wouldn't call that predictable. And he never actually, I don't think he ever threatens violence on those kids. He never looks like he's going to harm those kids. As opposed to Nicholson in The Shining, who is definitely trying to kill his wife with that axe. Like, he is definitely coming for her.
That's an interesting question though. If the wife was around, would he have wanted to kill her?
Yeah, I don't know that we didn't get the backstory. We don't know that, you know, the hurt there and their relationship. Clearly, in the beginning of the movie, he was trying to be like, what are you doing with that guy? Come on. I'm better looking than him. Or whatever, you know, whatever game he was trying to spit as she was walking out the door.
Yeah.
All right, Darren. Thank you, Rotten Tomatoes reviewers. Thank you, as always, for your service to our podcast. All right, Darren, it is time. What they've all been waiting for. Answer some of these questions here. It is time for us to pitch our sequels. What are you doing this week? Edge of Winter. Sounds like you might be doing a gritty family prequel. I don't know. Let's see what Darren has for us this week.
I could see why you would have thought that based on my previous comments, but I'm actually doing a sequel. So let's say, I don't know, 5 to 10 years go by. The family, the secondary family, if you will, with the new husband slash boyfriend are living in London as planned. And there was never any confirmation, but they just assume Elliot was dead because they never heard anything from him. He never popped up again, etc. However, strange things start happening to the family at their house in London. And soon they discover that Elliot is alive and has found the family and is terrorizing them, sort of not necessarily in their face, like attacking them, but kind of messing with them, like messing with the jobs of the parents, kind of messing with the kids in their school. You know, nothing violent, physically violent, but kind of malicious. But then things do escalate and they do get violent. And ultimately, it's sad, but Brad has to kill his father to save the rest of his family.
Wow. That's dark.
Yeah, it went dark. Got real dark.
All right. So you are having him escape. Is it winter, at least, in London?
Yeah, it's cold. It's okay. totally winter, for sure.
Do they live in the English countryside?
That would work a lot better because we know that Elliot knows the woods.
Yeah. But it's still foreign territory. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe it's Greater London. So it's not, you know, not City of London. It's a suburb or something of London.
All right, so Darren is following the kids and the family. I am going to stick with my sequel. I am very much sticking in those Ontario wilderness, and I am sticking with Elliot out there. He's alive. I think I want to pick up immediately after this movie ends. So, look, what I want to follow what he does. So
interesting.
He stays out there. He commits to what he said. He's hurt. He's traumatized by his kids leaving, but he stays out in the wilderness and becomes more and more unhinged. And a new group of hunters come out to the area. They go to find the cabin, but the cabin's burned down. Maybe he finds another shelter or something like that, or makes a rudimentary shelter. And now he feels like these new group of hunters are invading on his territory. And if they find out what they did, if they find Luke and Richard, you know, they're going to turn him in. Like this life that he is building for himself in the wilderness is going to be ruined, away from unplugged, away from society. Uh-huh. So his only option, of course, is to kill all the hunters. The so hunters like, become the hunted.
This is like adult Jason. instead of killing teenagers, killing adult hunters.
Yeah, so we're on his, yeah, so basically he becomes the ghost of like the Ontario wilderness, like Ooh. basically like you don't go into the woods in Sudbury or you're gonna get murdered by Elliot.
Oh dang.
Yeah.
Yeah, then you can make like 17 of them.
Yeah, absolutely. I did think of another one where a family shows up to like go camping and with two young kids, and he steals the kids, and the original dad has to like fight him to get him back, something like that. So maybe that's Edge of Winter 7.
Yes, yeah. Oh, right. You could call him the Baker Butcher.
Okay. All right, Darren, those are our sequels. I hope everyone out there enjoys our pitches. It is time for quick picks. It is time for our nitpicks of the movie. It is time to pick out those last little details that we need to shout out and talk about. Darren, what do you got for me this week in quick picks?
That was a long in. I liked it. My first one is, do you think Richard, who's one of the people who come to the cabin unknowingly to meet them, do you think in the summer he's also Captain Jack Sparrow?
What? Wobbling around with his bottle of booze?
No, he looked, especially in the lighting of the cabin, it looked like he had like eyeliner on, and like he just had that almost it was almost like a toned down Captain Jack Sparrow face to it.
Interesting.
You have to go back and look at it, but that's the first thing I thought of.
I mean, he's not even in the movie long enough for me to get a read on him. Yeah. Interesting.
Not the way he necessarily acts or his movements, just the face.
All right. There you go. My first one, I'm going all the way back to the beginning of the movie. What's up with Tom Holland hating bowling? What's he got against bowling? I shouldn't say Tom Holland, but Bradley. Yeah. Bowling is a perfectly fine activity to do with your estranged father.
Yeah. Bowling's a lot of fun.
He should be lucky to go bowling.
He's like, I'm too good for bowling. I'm just going to read books. I don't bowl. My next one was, I'm pretty sure Elliot would be a Trump supporter. And this came out in 2016. So we assume it's present day. You know that jerk voted for Trump.
There's one problem, Darren.
What?
He's in Canada.
Doesn't matter.
On Twitter.
Dual citizenship.
On social media. Yeah, he probably does believe in small government. I'll give you that. Yeah. All right. This took me completely out of the movie. What big brother would sit in the back seat while his little brother sat shotgun? That is completely unrealistic.
I don't know. They have a tumultuous relationship.
You think he hates his dad that much? He's giving up shotgun on what seems like an hour and a half drive into the forest?
Yeah, maybe.
No, he's not giving up shotgun. That's ridiculous. Unless there was a scene of the two brothers playing rock, paper, scissors outside the car. Yeah, then I would have believed it.
They definitely should have. They probably, you know, that's on the cutting room floor. They really should have kept that in. I think they were just going for like a, oh, Caleb is much younger and naive. But it's like after, I think it's after Elliot's like second significant breakdown it's when they're sitting around the fire after Elliot rescues Brad from the water. So yeah. both Brad and Elliot are like freezing, right? Because they were in super icy water. And so they're trying to get warm. And then Elliot has this thing about like how he can't lose them. And he gets like real emotional and starts crying. And I thought he was going to put his head through the window.
Yeah.
I totally thought it, because he's kind of softly banging his head on the window. And I totally thought he was putting his head through that window. But then Caleb asks Brad, is like, do you think he's okay? And it's like, no, Caleb, no, he's not okay. The answer is no.
That's that young innocence, right? Of the younger child who doesn't see the dad in the same way.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got some problems with cars getting stuck in snow. We have both had cars stuck in snow. We both helped people get their cars out of snowbanks. They didn't try rocking the car at all. Do they not know what rocking the car is up there in Sudbury, Ontario?
That's true. They did. They only pushed one direction. You're right.
If you've never driven in snow, if you've never had your car stuck in snow, You got a rocket. You drive, you gas it forward, then you drop it in reverse. You floor it in reverse, then you drop it in drive and you floor it forward, and you keep going back and forth until you get some traction.
Yeah. It's true.
And then there's no way that three adult men and two growing boys could not get that truck unstuck.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, there's no reason why they didn't all go out to that truck in the morning and push it out of the snow. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's true. They totally could have done it.
I have gotten some miraculous cars out of the snow in my day. I've seen neighbors with their cars basically on their front lawns and been able to push them back into the street. Like, it can be done.
My next one was when Brad sends Caleb to go get help, right? So they're trapped in the room in the cabin, and they realize they can get through the floorboards, there's like a crawl space underneath the house, and they can get out of the house that way. And so Caleb at the time is the only one that can fit down there. And so Caleb goes, and Brad's line to him before he leaves is like, "You got to find help. It can't be that far away." It's like, yeah, it can. It yeah. can be really far. Have you ever seen Canada? It could be really, really far.
They walked like half a day from their own car to find that cabin.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Help. He could very easily die of hypothermia before he finds help.
My problem with that scene is he hands him a flashlight. A flashlight up until that point has not existed in the movie.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah.
Where does that flashlight? They had a lantern the whole time. The lantern's been there. He just hands him down hands him down a flashlight that had not existed up until that point.
Well, he knew he couldn't give him the lantern because he was already plotting in his head how he was going to set the whole cabin on fire.
Great plan. Terrible.
Great plan.
All right. My last one here. How does jumping into the water help his son get out of the ice?
Yeah, I think it was supposed to be one of those things where, like, because he does go belly first. So I think it was supposed to be one of those things where he was going to try to stay out of the water, but more ice broke. And so he also fell in.
I didn't see more ice break. I think he was like a penguin sliding into that water. Take off a belt. Maybe you're supposed to throw him a rope. Like, you need to stay on solid land to pull him up. You can't push someone up from the water, especially not a 15-year-old. Maybe if you're like 4-year-old is swimming in the pool, you can push him up and out off the side of a pool, but you're not pushing a 15-year-old up out of the water.
Yeah. Yeah. I fortunately have never been in that kind of situation, but I've seen lots of videos and it looks terrible because it's like, you try to get yourself up and out, but then you're still way too much, and then more ice breaks, and then you're still in the water. And then you try to get up and out, and more ice breaks, and you're still in the water.
That's right. You need someone on land to pull you up.
Yeah. Related to that, I was hiking with some friends earlier today, and one of them was telling me about how she was at Edgewater Beach Park, which is a local beach here in Cleveland on Lake Erie. With their dog recently, and their dog fell through the ice into Lake Erie. But fortunately, they were able to grab him, and like, it wasn't, yeah, like she said he was only in the water for like 10 or 15 seconds. But like, yeah, it was like a full on, like, you know, it was a scene. Yeah. It was like the dog fell in the water and they're like sprinting to get him out and the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I would not let my dog run out on the ice.
Well, that's, you know, I mean, scary. they were close to shore, you know, like, so it wasn't like deep, deep, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oof. That's a scary one. Yeah. All right. Well, on that horrible note,
the dog is fine.
still messed up, Darren. You brought us all down.
This whole movie brought me down.
Well, it's a perfect lead into how you felt, what you decided for this movie. Darren, before we make our decision, do you want some trivia for this movie?
I do. Thank you.
Well, I want some trivia too, because there is nothing on IMDb this week. There's nothing on Wikipedia. There's that it was minus 30 degrees is the only thing I got from the director. Here's the trivia on IMDb. Joel Kinnaman and Tom Holland have been in superhero movies. Tom as Spider-Man in They just call him Tom. Tom as Spider-Man in Captain America Civil War and Joel as Rick Flagg in Suicide Squad. Percy Hines-White also stars as Andy Strucker in X-Men-based TV show The Gifted. That's their big trivia, that they've all played superhero characters.
Well, that's kind of nifty.
Oh, come on. How about the lesson?
It's better than nothing.
It's better than nothing. Are you ready for the lesson this week?
Is it about mental health?
No, we already covered that kind of. Okay. No, the lesson this week is about, could you drive a car through a fence? It was going to be one of my quick picks, and I had to look it up. It's not a very good lesson this week. But he was 10 feet in front of that fence and just gave it. He was going like 30 miles per hour and busted through that
fence. I feel like this depends greatly on what is holding the fence together.
And it wasn't even a fence. That was the steel bars. Like, that was a steel arm held together by a chain link. So I had to turn to the experts on something like this. I had to turn to the Mythbusters. And yes, they have an episode from 2010 where they were doing movie myths and they wanted to test whether you could drive a car through a chain link fence or through a closed fence gate.
Yeah.
And it was a chain. They did a chain link fence. Okay. I think secured the same way though, with a chain and a lock. Yeah. And they got their car up to 70 miles per hour. And yes, it busted through that thing. And the door swung open just like in a movie. However, the car didn't have a roll bar. Joel Kinnaman's Jeep, Elliot's Jeep, did have the roll bar. But both airbags went off, and the car went wildly out of control once it went through the gate. So to just drive through a fence and then calmly just drive away, I'm a little iffy on that science there.
That was a great lesson.
Thank you. All right, Darren. With all that said, it is time for us to make a decision once and for all. Edge of Winter, is it a good movie? Is it a bad movie? What do you say?
I said this was a good movie. Really, while watching it, I was kind of surprised it was a meh movie, that it fit our qualifications. I thought that Joel Kinnaman did a really good job in this movie, and I thought it really carried the whole movie, to be honest. And I thought it was an interesting plot. I mean, yeah, sure, I think you can make some comparisons to The Shining, but I mean, The Shining's on a completely different level, right? I mean, it's just like, it's not even, you know, it's totally different discussion. So I thought it was a unique plot, and I thought the acting was pretty solid, and it kept me entertained. And I really was having a hard time finding as many negative things to say about it as I sometimes otherwise do with the movies that we watch. So this is going to go in my good movie basket. And if you're in the mood for sort of like a, you know, like currently right now it's winter in Cleveland and it's kind of dreary and stuff. And so if you're in the mood, you know, on a weekend to watch a kind of suspenseful, dreary kind of wintry movie, this might be right up your alley.
Dreary is clearly your word for the day. You're going to get as much mileage out of dreary as you possibly can.
Dreary.
I am going to agree with you this week. I think this is my first of season three. This is my first good movie of season three. Edge of Winter.
Is it really?
I think so, yeah.
Oh.
Edge of Winter is a good movie. And yeah, it was my first good movie of season three. Did I say Valentine's Day was a good movie? I can't remember. Oh, I said there was a good movie in there. So yeah, so I think the things, like we said, Joel Kinnaman's performance, and the movie is very, very well put together. It's a good looking movie. The editing is solid for an indie film. The performances are pretty strong. I think the disconnect is probably that some people went into this movie expecting more of a horror, more violent movie.
Yeah.
And that's not what this is. It really is this extreme metaphor for divorce and separation and, you know, resisting that and fighting against that. And yes,
mental health issues.
And mental health. And, yeah. And how mental health impacts that. Yeah. There were some things that could be flushed out more, but I think that's something you accept with indie movies, right? They don't have the time. They don't have the budget to flush out some of the things. A bigger budget movie might have time to add a scene or two in the beginning showing him with his family originally or with his, you know, we don't even know wife or girlfriend, just the mother of his children.
Yeah.
A bigger budget movie would have more time to flush out Luke and Richard and let us know if they're evil or good, if the kids should trust them or if he's justified in killing them. But with an indie movie, you kind of got to get to the point because you don't have the budget to film more, to film longer. So you kind of accept that. And I was perfectly fine with that. I was definitely into the story from beginning to end. I was into seeing what happens with Elliot and where Elliot's psyche, you know, goes throughout this movie. So yeah, good movie.
Yeah.
All right, that is our conversation for Edge of Winter. If we haven't spoiled everything for you, go check it out. It's still a fun ride. Go check it out. Coming up next week, our episode, we drop episodes on Wednesdays, and our episode happens to fall on March 17th, which everybody knows is St. Patrick's Day. And yes, it's a very strange holiday that's been Americanized here in the States to be this weird celebration where we drink as much as humanly possible and eat corned beef and go to parades. And by the way, Cleveland has, I believe, the second largest St. Patrick's Day parade in the country behind Boston.
Whoa, are you sure about that?
I believe Cleveland is one of the top destinations for a St. Patrick's Day parade.
Not this year.
No, not this year. So it's a little cliche. It's probably a little bit offensive, but for St. Patrick's Day, we are going to be doing the horror movie Leprechaun. Leprechaun, which came out in 1993, listed as a horror comedy, and it's a 20% on Rotten Tomatoes, but it is a 4.8 on IMDb. And it launched a franchise. There are 5, 6, 7, 8 Leprechaun movies. So this is one of the legendary kind of cinema horror villains. I think you probably, with 8 movies under his belt, you might put the Leprechaun up there with Freddy or Jason if you were like doing a bracket of the top horror, classic horror villain.
Franchises, yeah.
So that is our movie next week, and we'll be back to break it down, to discuss it, and figure out if it's a good movie or a bad movie. All right, that's
is it,
all.
Is it okay if I record drunk next week? Is that cool?
I would say we do a fan poll, but come on, we're not going to get that kind of fan engagement. We'll see. You'll have to tune in next week to find out if Darren comes in absolutely wasted.
This is the best movie I've ever seen in my life.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Please subscribe, rate, and review the show on whatever podcasting app you're listening on. You can follow us on Twitter at No Meh Movies. You can follow me on Twitter at Davey Barris. Thanks for supporting the show, everyone. And the next time your friends ask about a movie, take a stance and tell them if the movie is good or bad. Because on this show, there are no meh movies.